Get In! This week, producer Giovanni and myself are joined by two very special guests. Confederations Cup review as we look forward to the final. Carlo Ancelotti heads to Real Madrid. Laurent Blanc replaces him at PSG. We have all the latest transfer news from the Premier League and why we all love the beautiful game of soccer. This and much more. We're live at the London and Addison. We're on the ball. Good morning, afternoon, or evening, whenever you're listening to it. This is the On The Ball, match number 5, the 5th podcast in the series. Brad Namdar's here. How are you doing, Brad?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. West Overstreet, back again. How are you doing?
I'm doing fabulous.
And you guys are going to keep us informed of what's going on right now. It's Uruguay, Italy, the 3rd, 4th place playoff in the Confederations Cup. So this is how we know it's live here at the Londoner in Addison. Keep us updated. I'm not sure if we were setting up, so we didn't get to see the starting lineups, whether Forlan or Suarez, Cavani are playing.
Yeah, they're all three
playing.
Yeah, our guns are blazing.
Can we do a quick prediction? Who wins? You guys? We won't analyze it, just quick prediction.
It's either going to be 1-0 Italy or 2-1 Uruguay.
Yeah, I think 2-1 Uruguay. Or 2-0 Uruguay.
Does Cavani score again?
I think Forlan will get a goal. Yeah. Maybe Suarez.
Missed that penalty the other day.
But yeah.
We go straight to the Confederations Cup talk. Semi-finals happened. Uruguay getting beaten by Brazil. And Spain beating Italy on penalties. What do you guys think of the games? Brazil, I thought... who I've been getting a lot of stick from because I've been trashing them over the last few weeks. They didn't actually play very... I thought this was their worst game against Uruguay.
Yeah, I mean, Uruguay, I mean, looked comfortable the whole time. Just kind of sitting back, playing defense, and then countering over the top with their big three. So, I mean, I think they played the game they wanted to play. They just didn't execute in the final third.
I mean, it had to be Neymar's least effective game. I remember the first goal was fantastic. I think he like chest controlled it, had the shot. It was a decent save. Comes out to Fred,
yeah,
who knocks it
he
in.
Tried to chip
but,
it back.
But it was his least effective game against the best opposition he's come against in the tournament. Can we say anything?
Well,
it's Jake Wright. Am I right? I've been saying about him.
I think that
just one quiet game.
I think that when you look at the tournament, the way it's the way it's set up, the amount of games and short time span, and Uruguay is a very physical, also defense. They got a lot of fast players as well. But I think, coming into the matches, Neymar gets hit every single game a lot. I think if you watch last game, it looked like, he was a little bit rattled, I would say. And maybe
he flopped a lot.
Yeah, he flopped a lot. I think he was trying to keep himself healthy. But I also think that when you have a squad like Brazil, they know that they're going to win that match. So... they just, have to play, not go overboard. People are worried about also, advancing to the finals. I think they played comfortably, but they didn't play with flair. So I think that was the difference. When you see them play, you want to see the style. Ding, 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 ding. But they didn't need to do that. They just needed to play comfortably.
Yeah, I think that it would have been a totally different match if Forlan makes the penalty early on.
Yeah.
Puts the pressure on them and forces them to come out. Because that would have opened up the counterattack for Uruguay a lot more, which...
Exactly.
It
would have forced Brazil to really go after them and would have opened the game up completely. In terms of the game plan, I guess... Uruguay had the three big guys up front. We said earlier, Suarez, Cavani, Forlan. For the majority of the game, it was working.
Mm-hmm.
They just...
I think from the get-go, the pressure was on Uruguay. It wasn't on Brazil as much.
You don't think so?
I think Uruguay... said we have to score. Brazil was more like, we know we're gonna score eventually, we're gonna get the goals. So I think that the pressure was on Uruguay, and also people don't realize that there's a big psychological blow missing a penalty with the whole team, with everyone there. Everyone thinks it's an automatic goal, you think you're gonna score, but now we see more and more people miss their saves, their psychological pressure, and that's a big blow to the team, especially when you're playing in Brazil against Brazil.
Yeah.
You miss a PK, get your heads down.
And West's David Luiz gives away the penalty.
No.
And he drags it down. But there's not many penalties given for an incident like that. It was a tug on the shirt. Mm-hmm. I think it was a clear penalty, but
yeah,
I mean definitely blow missing the penalty was.
It's not been called before, but it's definitely a penalty.
Yeah, exactly. We need more consistency from these refs. That's for sure. Spain, Italy, goes down to penalties, right down to the wire. I mean, I know the finals. Obviously, today we'll do a review of that. I think playing 120 minutes and a day less of rest might affect Spain today. But in terms of the game, I mean, is there no surprises that Spain went through? Maybe just that it took them.
You go first.
I don't think it's ever surprised when Spain wins. So, Italy played really, really well. I mean, I think it might have been a big. Having Balotelli up top,
instead of Gilardino,
yeah, would have been a big, big difference. We probably might have seen a different result. I think Italy might have won that way.
And Pirlo played the full game. Mm-hmm. 38 years old. I thought he was done. You know, incredible.
Yeah, Italy did a great job of just keeping that middle tight, and then they kept that like Pedro and Alba from coming up the flanks too. So I mean, they played masterfully, I think. If they would have been some better finishing in the final third, they probably should have won that game.
And if you watch it too, Italy was doing pretty much, Tahiti tried to do what Italy was doing, and Italy's just, you know, obviously better. They were giving Spain the flanks. They didn't want Spain to go through the middle, and they were closing down. The Italian defenders are very big, very physical, but then on the counterattacks, if you watch, they usually had one striker up top, but their wingbacks were getting so high. I mean, I here's the thing. Watching Spain versus Italy, I wanted. I was watching as a spectator. It didn't, you know, matter to me who won. But then I was rooting for Italy towards the end, and so were a lot of the Brazilian fans too. They wanted Italy to win as well because they were hanging in there. They had so many chances up top, and you know it's unfortunate to watch them, you know, lose coming out of penalties. But Spain was outplayed, in my opinion. They were outplayed. They said, "We'll give you the flanks. Now try to get the ball into the box. Try to get the ball in the middle, in front of our goal." And they weren't able to do that.
That's funny you say that. So we could say that Spain had their worst game of the tournament in the semifinal, and Brazil had their worst game in the semifinal, and they're both obviously duking it out today.
And that's because a lot of you'll see this in professional international soccer. The sad fact of the matter is that there is a mindset. Coming in semifinal matches when you're a big contender, a big team, is that your eye is on the final already. You're not worried as much about the semis, and it's kind of hard and frustrating for coaches to shake that off of your players, saying, "Hey, we need to win this game before we get to the finals. This is the game we need to play." And both teams, you know, when you're the favorite, the other guys came out swinging harder. They came out swinging much harder to try to get to the finals. So it kind of was like a reality slap to their face. And then, you know, they ended up winning, but I thought Italy played, you know, the best game I've seen them play.
Yeah, I think, in my opinion, just Italy just played so well. I think that was the big thing. It wasn't that Spain wasn't focused or ready to play. I mean, they obviously want to win this, but Italy just killed it. I mean, they came with the right game plan, and they executed it.
And I think you're right. I think if Balotelli was up front, it would have been a different game. I mean, a physical presence up front, and he's definitely, I mean, a class above Gilardino, at least.
Gilardino was putting pressure. He got opportunities. He was getting opportunities there, and I think that was important to notice. But also, I think we just got a goal right now from Italy on a free kick. Outside. Oh, please tell me. Is that Gilardino? It's a lefty.
If it was a free kick, I would have thought Pirlo's taking the free kick.
It's outside from the left. Wow, okay. But anyways, I think that, you know, Italy didn't do bad up top, but also, you know, if you look, Fernando Torres had another, you know, opportunity to go out there and to show what he can do. And, you know, he missed a couple opportunities here and there, but the most important thing people have to understand is that when you're coaching or when you're with an international team, you're looking at, can this guy produce opportunities? That is the most important thing. And Fernando Torres can do that. He'll create chances. He'll create opportunities. You know, of course you want goals, but just so he can get into the open space and, you know, still show he can create opportunities, I think it's important for him.
Do you think he'll create opportunities against Brazil, which is later on today, Sunday?
Yes.
I think he will. I'm really excited to see how Brazil plays when they don't dominate possession.
Yeah.
Like, can they stay together as a team, or does too much individuality come out? because they're not able to hold the ball and move it around.
There's people that are talking this Brazil team up quite big, and today we get to see really how good they are, surely.
And this is your boy Neymar we got to talk about, too.
Okay.
This is his audition. He's going against Barca, you know,
if this was the on-the-ball bingo quiz, I think Neymar would be on the top of the list getting mentioned every week.
He's going to be going against Real Madrid center backs. He's going to be going against La Liga players.
Exactly.
This is, you know, kind of his time to show what he can do against the La Liga team.
What was that? You're putting me on the spot.
Santos Barcelona in the World Club Cup.
Yeah, and he did nothing. This is my whole Neymar
argument.
Here's the thing, though.
Two different teams, and now he's going to La Liga, and now, you know, he's playing the best he's ever had in the international side right now. So
true.
I think that this is now we'll see. You know, within a year, has he matured? Maybe not. But
he
scores
a hat trick today against Spain, and I really...
Yeah, you're done.
I'm done. My opinion of Neymar, I have to...
Has to change.
Completely.
For Brazil to win, they're going to have to be special.
Yeah. Well, will they play Hulk? I mean, Hulk has been...
They will play.
I mean, I know a frequent guest on him, Mark Mayer, has been down on Hulk. And I mean, at the moment, Hulk's... he's awful, surely.
The right side of Spain is going to be... right side of Spain, the left side of Brazil, that's where the game is going to be won. Because you have Marcelo, you have Neymar on the left.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, you have Alba on the right. Oh, no, you have Albiol.
Albiola.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're going to see a battle on that side, okay, with the wingers and with the backs. That's where the game's going to be won.
That's a good thing. He's probably Spain's weakest guy. He used to play for Liverpool, now at Real Madrid, up against Neymar.
Yeah, that's where you're going to see the battle. And also, Spain, here's the thing. Brazil is a very passionate country, passionate team. Personally, I'm rooting for Brazil for different reasons, from FIFA rankings to, you know, also with all the protests and stuff like that. I think it's good for Brazil to win. But the pressure is on Spain, believe it or not. The pressure is on Spain. They are a compact team. Brazil plays with a lot of flair, a lot of attacking. We want to push up and score goals, but there's the problem. It leaves them vulnerable to the counterattack by Spain, which Spain is very good at transitioning the ball. They can get it up and down the field, 3 seconds or not. Xavi, Iniesta, you have a speed demon, David Villa, Torres, all these forwards, Soldado. Jesus Navas came, you know, and showed he's got speed.
A lot of flair.
So if they get exposed in the back, Spain will punish them. So, you know, it's going to come down to, I think, you know, the big players playing big and that left side of field.
How do you think the game's going to go, West?
Oh, just going back to that transitioning that you're talking about in Spain, that's one thing that's been a little bit off for them during this tournament. I think they're really missing Xabi Alonso, helping to transition that ball and through the midfield.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Spain came in with a lot of hype. And I mean, they haven't really... I know it's not fully the complete team. Like, Xabi Alonso has been missing. Puyol's been missing. So it's not completely the 100% team, but they haven't quite hit the heights of what we know they can do.
Right.
But they turn it on when it counts.
Yeah.
I mean, you're double European champions, world champions.
This is the only trophy they haven't won. This is the only trophy this team hasn't won.
Trophy. Yeah. It's like the Brazil's inspired. Olympics.
Pretty much. But you know what? Here's another thing I want to point out. When you say the predictions about it, you know, there's a very special young lady I know. Her grandparents are from Mexico City. And I talked with him. His name is Tony. And he predicted, and I'm giving him a shout-out, 2-1 win for Brazil. That's his prediction. I'm going crazy on it. Okay, I'm 3-for-4 on predictions, but I'm saying 3-1 Brazil, or if Spain wins, it's going to be 2-0.
West, prediction?
I'm going to go 2-1 Spain with a late goal for Brazil. I think Spain's gonna dominate.
I really want Spain to win. A, because we all love being right, and I've been trashing Brazil. And if Brazil win and beat Spain, then
just go with your heart, man.
Gone down the
top. Go with your heart. What does your heart tell you? Because Brazil, I say.
I think you need the ball to win the game, and I don't think Brazil are gonna get the ball. I think as you alluded to at the start, this is the first time they're gonna come up against a team that is gonna have more possession than them.
Right.
And we'll see really how good this Brazil team are, because they're not going to see the ball that often, so they're going to have to be very, very good creatively going forward. I think Hulk is terrible. I'm still, as much as I've had to eat humble pie on Neymar, he's still not world class to me. He's up against a better Spain team, a better Spanish defense. Fred's okay. I thought he's very good at being in the right place at the right time. But he's not a creator. He doesn't create opportunities. He just happens to be there.
I think for Brazil to be good, or I think Oscar. I think if Oscar plays really well for them,
he's very good. Yeah.
He's really good at getting the ball to where it needs to be and opening up space for players.
Yeah.
I remember the goal he set up for Joe was a beautiful ball. He put it in space and Joe just had to run to it and beat the keeper. I think if he plays well, that could turn the tide for Brazil. I think he's that dynamic up front. Yeah.
And Paulinho, who we're going on to the transfer window later, but
so we got Spain and Spain. You guys got
Spain. Oh, yeah, we got two Spain. Okay. But Paulinho, who did that fantastic pass to Neymar in the last game, I mean, he's as crucial. He has a great game like Oscar. I mean, I'm not saying Brazil don't have a chance to win. I just don't think they will win. I think Spain have that much quality.
All right, well, if I win, you guys buy my food next week. If you guys win, I'll buy both y'all's food. I'm telling you, Brazil's going to win this match.
That's a deal.
Deal? Deal? Deal.
We'll see
Brazil.
About that.
I'm going to be texting y'all after every Brazil goal.
Really? Well, we'll
told you so. Told you so. But, no, I think you're right, though, with the possession. But also, you guys have to understand something as well is that, you know, also, Spain, Piqué got a little hurt. They had a less day's rest, 120-minute match plus penalty kicks. Very tough psychologically and physically. Brazil, sitting back in the air conditioning of the hotel watching the game, they didn't care. They loved it. But, again, these are professional players. They're supposed to be fit, yada, 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 all that good stuff. I think that Brazil is a little healthier. I think that they have a little more passion. And I think that Brazil also is, you know, in a comfort setting zone. Spain isn't. I'm curious to see how Piqué's feeling. I'm curious to see how a lot of the Spanish players are feeling right now. You saw them. They were falling down, cramping up. And now you got to play in this heat for the final.
Absolutely. I mean, Spain's second team is arguably almost as strong as their first. So
that's what they said with Germany and USA beat them. 4-3. Remember
third
that?
Third string.
Okay. Yeah. It was third string Germany, but
we still beat them.
Now, the German depth isn't nearly as Spain's good as the
Spain.
And
Cavani.
Offsides, I think.
Offside, yeah.
Oh,
Cavani scores an offside goal. As you know, we're live. I mean, look, Juan Mata would get into any international side in the world. And he's pretty much a bench player for Spain.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, like I said, Brazil will win the match.
Okay. We have two guys, me and Wes, think Spain will win. Fran, so we're going to see. We'll see next week.
With style, too.
With style. From Confederations Cup all the way to European soccer, club soccer. Carlo Ancelotti, former Chelsea boss, won the league with Paris Saint-Germain last year. He's off to Real Madrid to replace Jose Mourinho.
Mm-hmm. My sensei.
I mean, is that a good move for Ancelotti? I mean, it's another huge club. He's got
anytime
great
you go to Real Madrid, it's a good move.
Not a bad move to go to.
Well, sometimes, I mean, these Real Madrid, how many coaches have they had? I think it's like 10 in 10 years.
I think they have a checklist.
They're Chelsea-esque.
They have a checklist of, like, you know, the top five most known coaches' names. Let's get this one. I mean, it was just a matter of time. I think that, I mean.
But he's an accomplished coach.
Yeah,
he's a very accomplished coach. And I mean, I guess somebody referred to him as a peacekeeper. Coming to Real Madrid, but I mean, one thing he does do is build relationships with players.
Yeah.
Big name, small name players. He builds relationships. The relationship with the players are never bad, and I think that's something that you need in Real Madrid to be for the coach to be able to get along with the players, to keep them happy. Mourinho is a little more abrasive at times.
But he builds relationships.
But he builds relationships, but I think Carlo Ancelotti does it a little bit better.
Well, okay.
He's a lot more quiet in the way he does things, I think.
But that could be a problem, in my opinion. See, I mean, you look at what he did at PSG, and I give him all the credit in the world, you know? You know, he's been there, what, two seasons?
Two seasons.
And I never really saw people wear PSG jersey until, you know, the past two
years.
Well,
because that's fine.
Let's just be honest. But, you know, it's because the team. And the team is, you know, is playing better and all that stuff. But here's the thing. You say Real Madrid. Okay. Real Madrid is a club that loves to win. Real Madrid is a club that when you say the name of the club, it just makes you want to sit up straighter. Okay? Yeah. Now, you have this club, Real Madrid. I think that Ancelotti, yes, he is a peacekeeper. You know, he does build relationships with the players. But there's two things that I look at. One, the size of this club. Do I think that Ancelotti could be pushed around? Yes, I do. Two, you talk about relationships with the players.
It's a bold statement.
Jose Mourinho.
Yes.
Okay. Very accomplished coach. Builds, and you look at the players that he's had relationships with, they all love him. I think being a Portuguese coach coming in with a Spain national team, half the squad there, half the squad Barca, you know, it was a little difficult. The ego at Real Madrid is huge. Now you look at this coach who coached at Italy, right? Ancelotti was in Italy, then England, then France, and now, you know, Real Madrid. Now look at the Real Madrid players. Do you think they're going to give him that much respect on his knowledge, saying, well, he coached in Italy, he coached coming out of France, and now he's coming here. He coached in England at Chelsea. You know, there is a certain... There's a certain, I think, a swagger about it that, you know, these players... You know, they have to respect. And I'll be curious to see how Ramos and Casillas and all them respect him. I'm curious to see that.
I mean, I think we can almost see a parallel between Ramos and Casillas, the core Spanish contingent in Real Madrid. And when Ancelotti, who's probably the only Chelsea manager since Mourinho that kept Terry and Lampard and those and Ashley Cole, those core, on side. So I think you can almost see a parallel. I mean, Ancelotti, I think he won the double with Chelsea. I think he won the FA Cup and the Premier League. He won the Champions League, I believe, with Juventus or AC Milan. And he was a great player. I think he'll be fine at Real Madrid. I mean, not he could easily be sacked in 6 months. That's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a decent move. He really wanted. He begged PSG to get out of his contract. And we'll see. I mean, Real Madrid's one of those places that you really don't know. Don't know whether Ronaldo will be there next year. I mean, they just signed Isco, obviously. That we'll get onto in a bit. But a proven winner. I mean, still remains to be seen.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
And then Laurent Blanc has replaced him. Former Manchester United, Inter Milan, Marseille, French international, captain of the European Championship winning team and the World Cup winning team for France. He's coming into an impossible situation, surely, with PSG. He's reportedly been the seventh choice. They wanted Arsene Wenger, and then they wanted Frank Rijkaard, who's obviously former Barcelona coach. Couldn't get any of them, so they get Laurent Blanc. I guess PSG, no matter what, will be challenging next year, we would assume. Yeah.
I think it's good. I think it's good to get a French coach also for, you know, Paris Saint-Germain. I mean, you know, it's good for someone to understand the culture of a club, understand the surroundings. I think also, you know, you said seventh choice. You know, a lot of times with coaches, opportunity is what's needed. So I think that it's good to come in as a little another thing. Maybe he'll go a little more with his gut as opposed to politics. So, and I think he's good as a French coach. So we'll see what happens. They have talent. Let's see if he can do it. You know, he's got the experience. So, I mean, I think it's a good fit.
Yeah, I mean, the big relationship there is with Ibrahimovic. Can he control that guy and make sure that he's in line? I mean, the team loves him, the players follow him, but just will he have that relationship with him? I think that's in key.
I mean, moving on from, well, we obviously know Monaco will be the big threats to PSG next year. In terms of transfer news, we mentioned Isco to Real Madrid. The star of the under-21 tournament, Manchester City lose out on another player, much like they did on Robin van Persie last year. Will they turn their attention to Cavani, or are Chelsea going to pip in and get him?
I think Manchester City already said they're not going to pay the fee, so and Napoli's saying it's the fee or nothing. So that's it's kind of...
I mean, that's going to be all, you know, the thing is with these clubs, there's so many things that people have to realize that go on with these transfers. The way a transfer works is, and I think it's important for listeners to know, is that it's not necessarily up to the players or the clubs. You know, you have three parties that have to agree. You know, you have the team that wants to purchase them, you have the team that they're getting them from, and then you have the player that has to agree with the fee and with the transfer. So it's not like one club says, hey, I want this guy. Okay, we'll take him from you. Okay, this is how much. There's so many things that go into it. And you look at it, especially with international, with a player coming from Italy to go to England or Germany to go to, you know, another country and stuff like that. There's a lot of other red tape that has to be there. But if they're saying right now we don't want to pay that much money to get him, that's not going to happen. They're going to move on pretty quickly, I think, to go look at someone else because it's just a headache. But, you know, I think maybe we'll see at the last minute they might say, okay, that fee's all right. You guys can have him, you know.
If Man City don't pay it, will Chelsea pay it?
No, I don't think Chelsea paid it.
I think it's going to come. Mourinho won't do it.
I think that price has got to come down. I mean, it's crazy. In the past week, I think Cavani has asked to have two separate meetings with Llorente from Napoli. One before the first comment he made about him being a real man. If he was a real man, he would stay at Napoli. That offended him. And then apparently he had signed to personal terms with Chelsea, which I have a question about that. Somebody can ask me. I thought that was tapping up. You can't do personal terms before you get the transfer fee.
The second time he was complaining about the asking fee for Napoli being too high.
Yeah, and he was like, well, can we talk about it? And then the manager's and like, that's we're not talking. There's nothing to talk about. I'm not going to meet with you because they're going to pay it.
Is he the quality player that either Manchester City or Chelsea need? I mean, me and Wes were texting in the week, and Cavani hadn't before that goal against Brazil in the Confederations Cup semi-final, he hadn't scored in four international tournaments. I mean, that was a Copa America, it was the Olympics, the World Cup. I mean, that's quite an outstanding record for a guy that's worth 50 million. I mean, goal scoring record isn't that impressive. Although his role for Uruguay is slightly different, he's out on the flank.
He puts up a good number of goals in Italy, which is more of a defensive.
For Napoli, yeah.
I can see him doing. See, you know, and playing in Serie A for Napoli. First of all, Napoli is a very passionate club as well. A lot of tradition there, I can totally see you know them saying, "All right, well, this is the price." You know, they going back and forth, but I can see them, like I said, the last second saying, "Okay, to Man City, that's it." I think it's a lot more to do with the ego and the conflict of things as opposed to the root of all conflict isn't about the conflict itself. Nobody wants to lose. They want him to bring him down. He says no. They back and forth. But I think that as far as his playing ability goes, he has to play in the right style and right team. I could see him doing much better at Man City than I would see him doing at Chelsea. And I don't think Mourinho is going to try to be overly ambitious to get him from Napoli.
I mean, we can't keep a player who wants to leave, surely.
Yeah, that's, I mean,
and that's
and
sad
it,
fact.
And Rentis is trumping it up. I mean, he's making the player upset. It's not like Cavani's ever came out and said, "Get me out of here, I want to leave." But the way he's being treated, it's unfair. You know, I mean.
Yes or no? Would you like him at Chelsea?
I would like him at Chelsea, but not at that price.
Not that price.
I'm a Lukaku fan. I want to see him. I want him to get a shot up there. I think.
If the sensei wants him at that price, then he's worth it at that price.
Mourinho.
Yeah, I mean, when we got Ba and Torres, I mean, we got just too much going on.
Yeah, I agree. I think for 50-odd million, that's a bit too much for a guy that perhaps isn't... Well, he's proven in a few seasons with Napoli, but for that amount of money, I'd rather take a risk on Lukaku, who proved it last season.
And we already have him.
And yeah, you already got him, right?
Yeah, we got to give him a shot. I mean.
Talked about Cavani, maybe Manchester City. Confirmed this week, Carlos Tevez has signed for, I believe, £12 million to Juventus.
We'll
wear the
so
number
low.
10 jersey that was vacated by Alessandro Del Piero last summer. Quick word on Tevez. Good player.
Sad
he's leaving the Premier League after so long.
I mean, I'm not sad about it, but I mean, he's a workhorse.
Yeah.
And he's got a great motor. He's going to score a ton of goals, at least in that first year.
I think, yeah.
As long as he can keep the right attitude, he can play anywhere in the world, in my opinion. I think he's that good, and he works that hard. It's just his attitude and wanting to go home, and he gets kind of temperamental after a year or so. I mean, I was surprised when he left Manchester United to go to City. I mean, I was like, why? Like, he's that good.
Sir Alex Ferguson didn't want him at the time.
Yeah, maybe he saw that temperament. That's why Ferguson's one of the great, probably the greatest of all time.
I mean, Tevez did turn down. His agent, Kia Terapshin, came out and said, "We rejected offers from Angie in Russia and Monaco to sign for the prestige, obviously the biggest team in Italy by far, Juventus, in terms of history and in terms
the
of fan
lady,
base, the
right.
old lady. I mean, I for one was sad to see him go. I thought he's been fantastic.
Yeah,
he's gonna mess with a lot of people's FIFA lineups too.
Obviously came to British shores with West Ham and then went to Manchester United and Manchester City. I mean, he is a workhorse. But that just leaves the door open for Manchester City. I mean, they only have Dzeko and Aguero technically up front, so maybe Cavani will really...
Dzeko, oh God, okay. But no, I think that Tevez, here's the thing. He's the guy, you know, he's similar to Wayne Rooney in the aspect of that workhorse, I want to get the goals, all this stuff, but they also want the respect. You know, they want this respect, they want this, you know, number 10 shirt, so to say. You know, and Tevez, when I think
they want
him,
to be loved.
They want to be loved, right. And you know, and Tevez going to Italy, it kind of gives me a few red flags, if I'm looking at it, is that because, one, you know, the Italian style football is different than the English Premier League, but I could also see him, you know, doing well because it's a little more free flow play. But the defenders in, you know, Serie A are also, I would say, bigger than in the Prem, but not as tactically gifted as they are in the Prem.
They're not responsible in space.
Yeah, but they're physical too. Yeah. So, you know, I'd be curious to see how that is. But also, I think that the 12 million is not
I don't think that's good for him.
I don't think that's outrageous. How old is he? 29?
That's very 28? Low for what I think the talent is worth.
And Cavani trying to come the opposite direction
for 50?
You know, so I think there's something.
One's high, one's low.
I think he really wants. Because here's the thing. When you say you're a player for Juventus, that's another level than saying I play for Monaco or I play for, you know, Team Russia, you know.
Yeah, Andrea.
Yeah, it's another level. So I guess, you know, going Juventus, he would take that lower fee to play for that bigger club, you know, to be in that realm, because when he gets purchased from Juventus, it's a little different than, you know, the other clubs. Plus, he's already been in the Prem. So I think that his agent and him talked about a little
bit. I'm sure he would have got more money going to Russia, to Angers or Monaco rather than...
Yeah, in Monaco, it's tax-free.
But here's the thing. He wants to win, too, you know?
Yeah, I agree, yeah. That's where I think we talked about money a few weeks ago on the podcast. I think that's where, to a certain degree... Money doesn't mean anything, and really, really it comes down to winning stuff.
And it's interesting because I think
plus it's pretty Argentina, proven. Man, moving to Russia, really,
it's proven. I think you leave the Premier League and you can play anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily proven the other direction. Right. I think if we're gonna get a good view of that, if Cavani comes to the Premier League and then we see Tevez go to the Italian League, I think Tevez will put up numbers similar to Cavani in the Italian League.
I agree. I think if you make it in the Premier League, you make it anywhere, and I think Tevez is. He's proven. I mean, despite obviously he refused to come off the bench that one time against Bayern Munich for Man City 2 years ago, and the off the field problems. Obviously, I think he got done for speeding recently, so he has to do like community service and stuff.
Yeah.
So aside from the off the field stuff, I mean, proven, not only proven workhorse, but proven goal scorer. I think Manchester City fans will be sad to see him go.
Yeah.
Every fan loves a trier on the field. From Chelsea and Man City kind of transfer targets, Manchester United finally going for Leighton Baines. £12 million offer rejected. I would have thought it'd be more for Leighton Baines. No,
for his age.
Yeah, he's 28.
And he's just started capping for the national team in what, 2010? Yeah. 2011. He's 20 years old.
Well, he is behind Ashley Cole in the pecking order.
Yeah.
The best left-back probably in the last 10 years.
Yeah, but, you know, I think he's a... I could see him as a fit with Man United. He looks like he would look good wearing a Man United jersey. He looks like he'd fit the mold. But I think that with what they have in their academy, I think what they have in the reserves, what I think they have, you know, in the Arsenal, that they're, you know, not overly... They don't want him for too much. They would love to have him, but, you know...
I think they'll table another offer probably in the 16 to 18 range. Mm.
I mean, obviously, I make no secret I'm a Manchester United fan. But if I take that equation, is that what Manchester United really need, a left back? I mean, Evra's decent. I mean, he has been declining recently. But I would have thought if you're going to spend 18 million, and this is the first transfer target Manchester United have had, really, I mean, in terms of a big name and a starter for next year. Wouldn't they go for a central midfielder, I would have thought, than start off with Baines? I mean, I wouldn't think the left-back position is that much necessary for Manchester United.
Sir Alex would go for a center midfielder, but he's not there anymore, so...
Well, he had to go for a central midfielder, I would have thought. You've needed one too long, but... If it was 18 million, is that too much money? Was he that good? I mean, the Premier League,
he's
that good.
From Everton, and the coaches, you know, from Everton. Look at that bit and think about it. And finally, they're going after him.
Yeah, top three to top five left back in the world.
You rate him that highly? I don't know. Maybe
your coach comes from Everton. You're now the head boss at Man United, and then you say finally they're going after him. Well, you know, he's also from his former club.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not surprised they're getting off him. I'm just thinking...
I mean, I don't think it's an outrageous fee.
Yeah, I think so, 18 million.
Compared to all the other numbers that are getting thrown around, no. I mean, for his skill set and his level of play.
Yeah, that's definitely true. hopefully that, I think that gets tied up next week. I'm sure Manchester United coming for a second bid. But we'll see. Leighton Baines, he's highly rated within, I mean, you guys rate him highly. And in England, they rate him highly. Obviously, he's playing a lot more now for the national team. I just don't think he's the first transfer target any club
needs
to go.
Yeah.
If you're Manchester United, I would have thought you'd get that central midfield role hammered out. I mean, obviously, you don't go for one target at a time.
Yeah,
but this is the one released.
Who do you think they should be targeting in the central divisions?
In the central midfield?
Yeah.
Oh, a guy who's probably Daniele De Rossi. He's obviously Italian, plays for Roma. Although I think he's 28, 29 now.
No, he wouldn't.
And Manchester City have been going after him, and he's been linked with Chelsea in the past. I mean, someone like that, a ball-winning midfielder. Obviously, like I say, I'm a Manchester United fan. Carrick had a very good season this past season. He's certainly not world-class at all. And he is 31, 32. So he's not going to be there forever. The jury is still out on Tom Cleverley. Darren Fletcher has obviously been ill for a long time with chronic bowel problems. So I think the central Anderson is not the player everyone thought he would be. I would have thought a midfielder is what Manchester United need. De Rossi is that type of midfielder. But, I mean, who knows? If Manchester United had Yaya Toure, that would be Xabi Alonso, or how do you pronounce his name? Flamini?
Yeah, Flamini.
Yeah, from Everton. I don't know why Manchester United don't go into him. And it's reported this week that Arsenal are going to sign him. And Arsenal would have, by an Higuain and Flamini, that would definitely help them. Yeah. I mean, we joked several weeks ago about Arsenal competing, but those two signings.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty good. But you put me on the spot, Wes.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Who should Chelsea sign then? Going a bit off topic, but cool. You said no to Cavani.
I mean, I'm not no to Cavani. I mean, that's just a big price.
Just no for 50 million.
Yeah, no for 50 million. If they want to throw 50 million around, let's go get Thiago Silva and put him in the central defense. And we need, as a center back.
You'd have the two Brazilian center backs if
that
happened.
Man, that works for me. They can play together internationally. They can play together at Chelsea. I mean, that's just more time
together.
I wouldn't
mind seeing him as a central defender or as a center defensive mid either.
Yeah, so that's. I mean, that thing about moving Luis to defensive midfielder. Because I think we're going to, Obi Mikel, I think we're going to let him go on transfer. So
I can see him playing there. Those guys, you know, a lot of center backs, you'll see them progress, you know, to that stopper role or that central defensive mid role, and I mean, you got to have a guy who's technically gifted as well. Luis has proven that. Thiago Silva has proven that. So I could see something like that happening.
Yeah.
You know?
Going back to transfer, that was one of the they were thinking. Napoli was asking for Ramirez.
For Ramirez?
In a make weight.
What, in a pod exchange for Cavani?
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that if I was Chelsea.
Yeah, Chelsea was like, no, that's not going to happen.
That's not going to happen.
I couldn't see Ramirez wanting to play for Napoli, though.
Yeah,
I mean, I wouldn't. Naples is a beautiful place, but for this point in his career, I wouldn't leave. I think you get a better chance of winning stuff for Chelsea than you do. Yeah. Playing under Mourinho, obviously.
Mm-hmm. It's a rough area, too, man. Naples. Yeah.
I mean, we'll see. I mean, Ramirez obviously isn't in the Confederations Cup squad. Paulinho is. I mean, he's going to Spurs for 30 million. I think these transfer fees are getting crazy. I mean, he did do that great pass. But there's an influx of Brazilians. Bernardinho is at Manchester City. He's not even in this Confederations Cup squad. I guess this is the new trend. Sign Brazilians.
They're trying to get the Brazilian players out of Brazil so they can get more experience.
And he said, which is leaks on the transfer thing, he's going to sign, Paulinho's going to sign for Tottenham Hotspur after he seeked assurances that Gareth Bale wouldn't be sold. I mean, which is interesting on, well, A, from two points, A, that Gareth Bale won't get sold, and then B, I guess that means players like Paulinho plays in Brazil, he knows what Gareth Bale's important for the future of Tottenham. I mean, that's we spoke the other week about how high we rate Gareth Bale. That's an indicator. I mean, if
his
another
strength,
player,
yeah.
Another player's getting attracted to Tottenham because of Gareth Bale. I mean, that's pretty good. Take a 5-minute break, and we'll be back. This is On the Ball. Welcome back to the On the Ball podcast. Little change of tact. Brad, do you want to talk about the American soccer? What's going on?
You know, right now, with U.S. you know, soccer in general, you know, we're doing pretty good within the World Cup qualifying stages. You know, I think people are now jumping a little bit more on support for, you know, Jurgen Klinsmann and the squad, you know, being first place in the group. And I think on July 6th, when the FIFA rankings come back out, you know, people are going to be a little more pleased with the rankings U.S. has. I know they're going to be higher than Mexico, that's for sure. So that's going to be exciting to see. But also, you know, I was talking with some people the other day. I mean, our under-20s, you know, in the World Cup. They're over there in Turkey. You know, granted, they were in the group of death, you know, with Spain, France, and Ghana. You know, weren't able to get a win. Lost 4-1 to Spain, opening match, you know, tied with France, and then lost to Ghana 4-1.
Don't feel so bad. England got knocked out, too.
You know, and the thing is they have 16 teams advanced, though, in this World Cup. You know, that's the way they do it. So, you know, it's top two, and then they pick four third-place teams that are, you know, the good underdogs. So, you know, but then in the U.S., we didn't qualify for the U-17 World Cup. First time, I think, like ever, actually.
What does this failure mean to you? U.S. soccer perspective at grassroots level.
What do you think? I don't know.
Go ahead.
What do you think? Why is there this failure? Is it a transition in?
I wouldn't call it a failure. I would call it a speed bump. You know, we didn't qualify for Olympics, you know, but I think that, you know, the United States Development Academy, you know, is also young. You know, it's not even 10 years old yet. You know, getting these kids when they have select soccer in the U.S., it used to be, you know, just club. You know, you play for a select team. Now what they have is another level higher than that, where you play for an academy team, which plays for the United States Development Academy League. And these kids are supposed to be the cream of the crop that the national team picks players from. And, you know, we have a residency academy, and it was this whole innovative idea to build soccer in the U.S. And the quality of players have gone up. Now, that being said, I think that maybe the progress of players might not be as fast as we thought it would be. You know, we have more players going overseas. I think that the first team versus the U-17s, U-20s, the gap between the quality of players is also is coming a little bit smaller, which is good. But I think that, you know what, honestly, I think coaching needs to be also a little more broad in our horizons. You know, United States Soccer Federation has a very, very tight way of wanting to have a coaching curriculum and have the coaches learn things. I mean, we have licenses people don't know from all the way to like F, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. You know, you go to your state, get your state license, and then until you get your C license, that's when you're doing your national United States Soccer Federation licensing. So it's actually really, really tough for coaches to advance their knowledge of the game. And I think that's maybe what is kind of, you know, holding back a lot of the progress in U.S. soccer is a little bit is about the coaching education and the outreach. To be able to qualify for a C license, you know, they only have a certain number of those clinics every year that are in Florida or California or random places.
And I'm sure a lot of these things cost a lot of money.
That completely cuts
away a lot of people that would want to be
coaches.
If you
want to do a C, a B, A, you have to pay for a hotel for 1 week plus, you know, it's like $1,000, $1,500 just to take the class. And if you fail, you don't get your money back. You know, it's tough. For a lot of coaches, and I mean, you know, I'm a young coach as well, and I see it all the time. You know, a lot of coaches, they got to go stay at the hotel for a week and go, you know, to Florida or go to California. It's only offered a few times a year, and I think that's what makes it a little tougher. I think they have to do a little bit more of trying to close that gap between the coaching education and the coaches in the U.S. But also, I think that, you know, the quality of players in the U.S. is coming up. I think that, you know, you look at this, some of these kids have prom. Some of these kids have, you know, you're in college and they're going against a guy who plays with, you know, Marcelo, you know, at Real Madrid every day. So, you know, to be able to compete with them, it's good. But I think that U.S. soccer is coming up as long as we provide more opportunity for players and also more opportunity for coaches to get the education that they need, because I think that's very important for a lot of coaches. They need that education, and U.S. soccer has to do the job of being able to give them that education.
I think, yeah, I agree. I think the biggest stumbling block is how much it costs to get into these academies or universities. I mean, look, if you haven't got any money, you could be the greatest athlete in the world here in the US. I mean, it's going to be very difficult to get into these soccer camps, and there's obviously a lot in Florida and these IMG academies. I mean, these things cost money, and you're taking away a huge, especially the Hispanic population, where they give
scholarships to a lot of guys. Like, if you're in the national team for the U17 squad and you're at IMG Academy, you are paid for. But that being said, IMG also has another team for players. Like, you can pay money. Yeah, it's an arm and a leg to go there. And you get to train with them. So it's like a separate squad. But you're absolutely right. For the coaching aspect, you have to pay the money to go. They have, like, very few scholarship things. But, you know, a lot of select soccer teams, it's $2,500. You could scholarship one or two players per squad. But that money comes out of the coach's pocket, you know, or the club's pocket. And they don't want to do that. So I think, yeah, you're right. It's very expensive. Very expensive.
I have another question. Since you're a coach, what do you think how lifestyle applies to kids playing soccer in the United States? Like, soccer is something you can play year-round. Mm-hmm. With, like, American football, you play it for a little part of the year, and you just kind of do other things that help you progress in the game. But in the United States, you have so many other things you do aside from your sport.
Right.
In other countries, it's kind of you can be more focused and just do that. You know, there's not so many distractions. Do you think that plays a big factor in the development of our under-21 teams?
Absolutely. You know, here's the thing. For example, when you play for academy teams, and again, this is supposed to be like the league that's a little higher than select. A lot of select soccer teams have an academy team. For example, FC Dallas has a youth club, right? But they also have an academy teams, and I work with them as well. And these kids, right, they're not allowed to play for their high school teams or their, you know, school teams. They can't play other sports. So those kids, 90% of the time, are solely dedicated for soccer. But they're supposed to be the cream of the crop. But then, at the same time, you know, I've coached, you know, middle school to varsity to college, you know, what have you. And I see the middle school kids, you know, they play football. Then they play basketball. And then they have club soccer year-round, you know. And it honestly, sometimes it persuades them not to play at the higher levels of soccer because it's so restrictive at times, which that's a cultural thing, I think, as well. It's you have to be more dedicated to it. And the players that see the talent and really love the game, they're the ones that stay with it in the long run. But I do think that in America, we're naturally more well-rounded, saying, hey, kids got to play basketball and try to do football. And, you know, let's get baseball. Before they're 12, 13 years old, I want them to try everything. Then at 13, then they decide. And I hear it all the time. When they get to high school, that's when I want my kid to be serious. Or that's when my kid's going to take it serious. And then you go to Europe, South America, those kids have already been serious about soccer since, like, they were born. So it's almost like you're a step behind on when you're supposed to get serious about the sport. So
what is that to do with how much... I would think young kids in the U.S. stop being involved in soccer because they don't see any money in it.
You know, that's not... Actually, here's the thing. When you're at that age, man, it's not about the money. I don't think so. It's not about the money. I think, you know, your
friends...
Or
even the prestige, no?
Yeah, I mean, the prestige... Not, yeah, I guess you could say. Like, I mean, I coach prep school, right? I've coached at a prep school. And, you know, the kids that go to that school... You know, they play lacrosse. Lacrosse is, I never played lacrosse, but that is very big among the prep school kids. And all the kids play lacrosse. That's like, they call them lax bros, man, lax. You know, that's what they want to play. You know, lax. I just can't tell you how sick I am of that phrase. But they want to be with their friends. So, you know, lax bros, they go play that. And then football, they want to play that. You know, you got college football in the U.S. It's like, you know, a religion of its own. You have American football. You have baseball. You know, you have all these other sports that... It's kind of like more kids play that, and it's more of a, you know, of a U.S. thing, not necessarily the money aspect of it. But the ones who take it seriously, who broaden the horizons, I think are the ones that stay with it.
You speak very eloquently about the U.S. soccer team, and it's very good. Question I was asked from a listener. The question was, what made you and the guests that were on the show fall in love with the sport of soccer? I want you guys, obviously, brought up in the U.S. You guys go first.
You got it.
West.
Mine's kind of long.
Was it a particular game? Was it a particular moment? What made you, like, become a fan of this sport that we obviously love?
When I was young, I was never really interested in soccer at all. And then I had a family friend, Drexel, who wound up leaving Abilene, Texas, and going to Europe and playing for a club in England. when we were kids. And so I was like, wow, I mean, there must be something really there. And then, like, the World Cups of the early 2000s kind of got me interested. And then when I really started to watch the Premier League, I was like, there's so much I don't understand about this game. There's so many intricate things that I don't understand
about
this game.
Was it difficult getting into it? Because early 2000s, I mean, you're relatively old, you know, in terms of, like, a person, I suppose, you know. Yeah. In terms of joining a sport, was it difficult to learn the rules of the game?
At first a little bit, because there weren't a lot of people to talk to about it, but I mean, the advent of the internet and things like that, you could read about it and understand some of the tactics, and you really start to see the intricacies of why players are so much more talented at a level than they are at other levels, and just watching the game, and that's, I mean, I was befuddled by how talented people were moving a ball with their feet, and then me trying to go do it outside, I was like, I have to have more respect for these people and what they're able to do, and that just, I guess just the technicality and the ability of the players is what drove me to the game.
And what made you support Chelsea?
Watching Didier Drogba play for the Ivory Coast led me back to Chelsea, and now I'm a Chelsea fan.
Okay, Bram, what made you fall in love with soccer?
I would say I fell in love with different stages or levels of the game at different times in my life. Soccer's been a very big part of my family. My great uncle, Jafar Namdar, he actually was inducted to the FIFA Hall of Fame a few years ago. He was the head of the referees for all of Asia. You know, refs in 4 World Cups, 4 Olympics. You know, he's old school, big time. My uncle played, professional for 15 years, San Diego Soccers, 5-time MISL Cup champions. I would go watch him play the sidekicks. And my dad also, played soccer with my uncle in college and stuff like that. So my uncle was in the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame as well. So, having that soccer family ideal mindset was cool. But the main thing was my dad, he still plays to this day. He's 60 years old, so he plays indoor and outdoor in men's leagues. And when I was a kid, Thursday nights he would play indoor soccer at a local place. It's an indoor soccer arena. And the games usually be late at night, so my dad would have to sneak me out of bed, or my mom would get super pissed if she found out, going to school the next day. And I'd go watch his indoor soccer games. And then they had a little warm-up room where you could go kick the ball around, and I would go kick the ball around there. But during the games when my dad played, I was the only kid watching it. The other kids would be, kicking the ball and playing. I would want to watch the games. And the passion and the environment was what I liked, and it transcended to my life. To playing and coaching. But I fell in love with coaching in high school when I started coaching a team called Endurance. I'll never forget them. FC. They were 8-year-olds. And, I just did it from Plano Soccer Association asking me if I wanted to do it. So I started coaching those kids. And I fell in love with it. Then signed my estadio years later with FC Dallas. And then now doing stuff with SMU Soccer, which is great, working. And it's that's how I fell in love with the coaching aspect. So the playing and the passion and all that stuff, it's been different levels that I've fallen in love with the game. So I would definitely say probably the indoor soccer games and, just having this, soccer family, it was something that I fell in love with.
I mean, it's always interesting for me to know because, being brought up in the U.S., it has to be, I feel like it's, no one just falls into soccer. Everybody here goes out of their way, either it's an extra circumstance, either their family, or they just, I guess they fall into the game, but you make a concerted effort to, get to know the sport, which is, being from London, in England, it's
natural.
Yeah, it's like a way, of life.
It's like here you go play pickup basketball. It's just like you go play basketball, or like after Thanksgiving, everybody goes out and throws the pigskin around. You know what I mean? That's what you're explaining, and that's
right,
what you do in England.
And at SMU, we have a soccer court. We have indoor futsal.
Yeah.
Which is cool. People go play there. So we're coming around.
I mean, for me, getting into soccer or unless football, I remember the moment distinctly. I was 4 years old. I saw 2 teams playing. One was in blue, one was wearing red, and I was like, I'm going to support the team in red. And I was 4 years old. It was Oldham Athletic. Yes, a lot of people wouldn't know who they are. They play, I believe, in the
League 1.
Either League 1, so the third tier of English football, or League 2, the fourth tier. And the team in red was Manchester United, so I got extremely lucky supporting Manchester United and choosing them. Obviously soccer is just a way of life in England. But I guess I fell in love with it. Just I don't know, the There's not. I mean, the other sports in England aren't huge, to be honest with you. I mean, rugby's kind of big, and Formula One, and tennis, and all this stuff. But I mean,
nothing compared to soccer.
Nothing compared. And even though the rival sports in England aren't even close.
Cricket.
Even cricket, it's not close to football, soccer. Whereas here, that's why I can understand why soccer isn't huge here, because basketball is huge. You know, I'm a Golden State fan. Steph Curry. NFL's huge. Even basketball, baseball's huge. So it's a lot of competition here, whereas in England, there's strong sports, but I mean, it's very rare to meet somebody that isn't into professional soccer in England. Producer Gio, if you want to say a few words, what made you do this podcast? What made you become a soccer fan? Go ahead.
Well, I'm from Mexico City, so, you know, I mean, my
Azteca.
Dad... El Azteca, there you go. The what did they call it? The Hell Stadium from everybody that...
The ugly stadium that no one wants to play in.
You know, that's a legend. So, I mean, I just grew up around it. You know, I just grew up around it. And my dad would... I've never gone to a game in Mexico City. I missed it. My brother did. But they have some crazy stories. And my dad would tell me stories. He used to take my brother, and my mom hated it too. One of the things that would happen is, and Mexico is very... I guess the culture is different. So if you have a rival team, you have two. I guess the biggest ones, I would think, it's Chivas, you know, which is my family is a fan of. And then you have Club America, right? So, you know, they get in fights and stuff. And my brother would come home and tell us how, you know, you see somebody back up if you're, like, higher up, a drunk guy. You know, pissing on a cup, and literally just throwing it and chunking and saying it in Spanish. You know,
and
watch
that's
out
why
for.
That's why Gio fell in love with the game, man.
You know, just stories like that. You know, and it's just part of life. Every Sunday we used to, you know, watch the soccer game, eat dinner. You know, and it's just part of how I grew up. You know, so that's
part
how
of the culture,
up.
Man.
Yep.
I would say the. I was asked actually last night, what's the best thing about soccer? And I remember when me and Gio were starting this podcast, he asked me the question. He was like, what made you start this podcast? And it's the reason still is the same. Soccer connects people all around the world. That no other... Now, you guys... huge in America. I mean, NFL and basketball.
No, you're right, though.
But soccer connects all these people around the world. You know, and there were multiple times that I'd met people who didn't speak a word of English, and I'd talk to them, mention a soccer player, you mention a soccer team, they'd instantly smile at you, yeah. They'd get engaged in the conversation, and you've met the stranger. It started with a instant wave and ended with a handshake. I mean, that's the beauty of this game. And speaking of games, Uruguay, Italy, what's the score, guys?
It's 1-1.
Cavani scored. Cavani scored?
Do we want to make predictions for that game? We didn't make predictions for this one.
I think we made predictions, yeah.
Oh, yeah, we did. We did in the beginning.
We did at the beginning. Well, now it's changed. How many minutes gone? You guys see?
64
minutes gone, 1-1.
Yeah, because I did say if Uruguay wins, it went 2-1.
That's it. Shot here by Suarez. We're going to leave now. On the ball. Live from the London Addison.
Oh, hold on. Before you leave, ooh. We got Spain, right?
Spain. Yeah. Two Spain. Yeah, me and West think Spain are going to win.
What about Gio?
Oh, producer
Spain.
Gio.
Spain. So we got 3-1. Okay, Brazil's going to win. Just saying, everyone. Brazil.
We'll find out in a few
Neymar.
Hours. Comment, review, post on the iTunes website and the Podomatic website. We're here. We're on the ball. The Londoner and Addison. Good food. Good pints of beer. A good time. See you next week.
It's this moment.